So let's take, excuse me, let's take a few minutes now in meditation. I invite you to close your eyes. And if you're holding anything, I invite you to put that down. Just so you can relax completely into the moment. So breathing in and breathing out. Breathing in. And as we breathe in, we breathe in the grace and the love and the energy of the Spirit of God. Imagine for a moment that at the very top of your head, the love and the grace and the Spirit of God at the very top of your head pours in through you. Let it pour through your mind and let it engulf your mind. That sense of love, that sense of energy, that sense of grace. The Spirit of God is pouring itself in you. And let it move down. Imagine that Spirit of God moving through you, through your throat, all the way down to your chest. And let it fill your upper body. Let this Divine Spirit fill your heart and fill your chest, fill the back of your chest. And your heart beats love, and your heart beats grace, and your heart beats the divine wisdom of the Spirit of God. Every pulse, every beat is a reminder of just how holy, how sacred, and how forgiven you have always been. So take a moment now. And from your head, through your face, through your throat, through your chest and heart, imagine you are filled with the Spirit of God. Imagine that that divine love has poured itself in you. And let's take that into the silence and let's just be with it. Let's just feel it. That as a child of God, you are the expression of all that is in the silence. Thank you, God. It is so hard for me to believe that I really am an expression of God. It's so hard for me to believe and understand how that could be. And yet here it is. You've poured yourself in me, and I am filled with the divine grace of the Spirit of God. And so it is. So it is, God. Namaste. Thank you. That was so pretty. It was. Hey, before I start, on the Day of the Dead service next week, this is the size of the photo I'm bringing, and, it's got one of the little stands at the back. And so it's about to be like this, or it could be a little smaller. Probably can't be too much bigger, because, we'll probably have 60 or 70 photos, so. But anyway, I just wanted to show that. I've been mentioning to people over the last week or so that I decided to get into a little bit of an historical mood. And so I wanted to talk about the Holy Grail today, and I think I'm going to talk about one of the Gnostic Gospels in 2 or 3 weeks, and I'm going to talk about what really happened to the Council of Nicaea. So all the people who love a good conspiracy want to come for that one. But today I want to talk about the quest for the Holy Grail. And we've probably heard the phrase, the words, the Holy Grail, and I think it's kind of interesting. So the question becomes, so what's the Holy Grail? And we can certainly turn to Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade, and he provides us a lot of information. But it's actually been stories about the Holy Grail have been going on for about 1,700 years. So it was even before Indiana Jones. Now, so what's the Holy Grail? Well, most specifically, it's supposed to be the glass, the goblet that Jesus drank out of at the Last Supper. Now, there's been some changes over the centuries, but that's essentially what it is. And the word Grail. Is a word that means a wide open opening. And so if you see pictures of the Holy Grail, it should be a really wide glass or goblet or bottle. Now, once in a while, you'll see some other things. You'll see the Holy Grail, it's a wide thing. And so some writers have said, it's called a sermone, and it was a wide open dish that served bread. But that tends to be not that common. So mostly they're thinking about the goblet. So what's the Holy Grail? That's what it is. So the Last Supper took place on a Thursday night. The story then is that Jesus was crucified the next night. And Joseph of Arimathea, he was one of the rich disciples. And so he was the one that provided the tomb that Jesus' body was taken to. And the legend is that he also was the one who was entrusted with this uh, with the goblet, with the Holy Grail. So, where did this last drinking of the Last Supper, where did the use of the Holy Grail take place? Well, there's actually a real, honest-to-goodness, huge building still standing that's called the Cenacle. And the Cenacle was owned by one of the disciples' mothers. The disciple was John Mark, who later just became known as Mark. And his mom's name was Mary. It's the New Testament. Everybody was named Mary. Yeah. And she owned the Cenacle, and she rented it out for different events. So the particular room that Jesus and the disciples were in was called, and you've probably heard this one, they were called the upper room. And that's the room that they were supposed to be in. And so it was kind of interesting to think about that. That here's this Holy Grail. Here's these people there, having dinner, and so the question becomes: well, is the Holy Grail? Is it real? Was there really this goblet? Well, at one level, it has to be real. He drank out of it, right? He had to drink out of something. Whether it was a paper cup or whether it was a, he had to drink out of something. So at that level, it's real. Now, was it holy and mystical and spiritual? Who knows? There's some great stories, and I'm going to talk about those. So when did the Holy Grail stories begin circulating? And the answer is they started circulating in about the 300s. And the reason that they started circulating is, to me, very interesting, very intriguing. That started from Britain. And the Romans had conquered Britain in about, about 100 to 50 BC. And the Romans stayed there until about 410 CE. And so when did the Holy Grail story start circulating? About 325 on. 325 was when Constantine the Emperor converted to Christianity. And then all of a sudden, we had this interesting thing happen, and that is these Celtic tribes and these Druid tribes in Britain had great storytellers. They had no written language, and so they became great storytellers. Matter of fact, we can hardly imagine it today, but the oral tradition, the storytellers, it was a 12-year training period to become a storyteller. And the storytellers were called the Fili, F-I-L-I. And they had to, on average, they had to know about 350 stories each. And the stories would take 1 to 3 days to tell. And the 12-year training period was, they couldn't miss a word. So it's very interesting. Now, the reason that the stories of the Holy Grail took place then in the 300s on, a couple of reasons. One, the Celts really liked Christianity. It really appealed to them. And they mixed some of the ancient religions, the Druidic religions, the Celtic myths, with Christianity, and that made sense to them, to have that kind of mixture of Christianity and these stories. And so for them, for the Celts, for the Fili, it was this perfect fit. There was this Holy Grail, which was kind of like, that's part of the new religion of Jesus, but it mixed really well with the old things like if you touched it, you could be saved. If you drank out of it, you could have eternal life. So it was very interesting, these stories. So so Christianity and the Celts and the Holy Grail really mixed together very nicely. And what happened then next was the Romans left Britain in about 410. They just pulled out. And so now from a spiritual, from a religious point of view, that was gone. And now the Celts were free to tell their stories. And what happened was the Celts, from 400 to about 924, told the stories of the Holy Grail. But when the Romans pulled out in 410, there was a great deal of confusion. The Celts were being invaded by the Picts from the north. They were being invaded by the Irish from the west. And they were being invaded by the Angles and the Saxons from the east. The Angles and Saxons were both Germanic tribes. And so it made sense to the Celts to have a mystical story that they could tell and retell, and they could sort of save them. Now, here's what I find interesting. At that time, the only ones who were really free to travel very much were storytellers. You know, they could go not just on Britain, they could go onto the continent, onto the mainland, and they could tell their stories mostly around campfires to peasants, to individuals just like you and me. But they were the ones who also got to tell stories to the religious hierarchy, the aristocrats, and the rich folks. And at that time, the bishops and the priests, they were the rich folks. and so they traveled and they told these stories, but again, you had this sort of dark period from 410 to 924. So what story did they pop up with during that period of time? You all know the answer. King Arthur. You know, and they started telling the legends of King Arthur at that time. And they immediately linked the legends of King Arthur and his knights and the Round Table to the Holy Grail. And there was just a whole bunch of interesting stories about the Grail and how it was created, what it was, what it really meant spiritually. But it wasn't until 1208 CE that the first Grail stories got put down in writing. And the Celts were sort of indirectly responsible because they were the only ones who could travel freely. And so they traveled a lot to France. And so the legends of King Arthur and the knights and the Round Table and the Holy Grail were stories that were about Britain, but they were mostly written by the French. So I found that ironic. So there was a fellow, and I have been working on this all week, okay? The fellow's name was Chrétien de Troyes. Yes. And as far as we know, he was the first one to ever put anything down in writing about the Holy Grail. And he was a poet. So he wrote a long poem about the Holy Grail. But here's what's cool. He purposely left the poem unfinished. Oh, that just captured everybody's imagination at the time. It was unfinished. The message being, you have to finish the story of the Holy Grail yourself. Well, and people glommed onto that because in De Troyes' message, I mean, he was a good writer. So, I mean, even in his one poem, he wrote love stories and battles and mysteries, and people were going, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was just, he was a great storyteller. So what this did was this triggered the next guy, and his name was Robert DeBoron, and he wrote the most about the Holy Grail. So again, we're still talking about the mid-1200s now, but he created stories about King Arthur, the knights, and the Round Table, and the search for the Holy Grail, the search for something that could transform you, the search for something that could be mystical, that would complete you. So he created all sorts of things. In particular, what Warren wrote was called what is called the Grail Cycle. And so the Grail Cycle was the story of the Holy Grail. The story, he's the first one to do this. He created the story about the wizard named Merlin. He created the names of Lancelot and Percival, and he didn't create the name of King Arthur, but just people, knights who were searching for the Round Table. And then he talked about the quest for the Holy Grail, how they scoured the lands in Britain looking for the Holy Grail. What I found interesting is that he also started inventing things. So he invented the idea of the Grail Castle, and the Grail stories, and the Grail women, and the Grail men. And then the last thing that he wrote in the Grail Cycle was about the death of King Arthur. By the way, the stories and the concept of the Holy Grail being something that could change us lasted really for hundreds and hundreds of years, still does. And here's what I wanted to mention to you, because I didn't know this before I started researching for this. There's an organization called the Grail Association. There's another one called the Grail Foundation. There's another one called the International Grail Foundation. And all of these are groups that get together, and they partially look for, is there a real Holy Grail? But they also just have, it's very transformative, very mystical, very spiritual. And they hold workshops, they hold conferences on that idea of the Holy Grail. Carl Jung, in psychology, wrote about the Holy Grail, and I know one that a lot of people here really enjoy is Joseph Campbell. He incorporated the Holy Grail into his mythology. So the story of the Holy Grail, it just kind of sheds some profound light on men's and women's searches for who they were and how they could be transformed. And for some people, it took an object. For others, that's just a story. For many people, the story was not so much about the object itself. It was about the journey and searching for it. That it became the journey that was transformative, not touching the goblet themselves. Although, what we know is that many people looked at different kinds of grails, and part of that search involved trying to sort out what exactly was the right one that you could drink out of and get eternal youth from having that happen. The last scene in Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade is him going and getting the goblet from some guy that's been there for 1,700 years, one of the knights. And they have the two villains trying to pick out. There's all these grails, all these goblets on the table. And the woman spy, she says, oh, it's this one because it's so elaborate, it's beautiful and all that. And she picks it and, drinks out of it and dies. And in the video games, the guy who's there says, "You chose poorly." and then the knight that's still there that's been living for hundreds of years says, he was a simple carpenter. It would have been a plain goblet. You know, and so he goes and picks the plain goblet. Well, factually speaking, it probably would have been the fancy one. I mean, the goblet came from the cenacle. The goblet came from a place where the owner was holding events, you know, setting up people for meals and drinks and the Last Supper and all that sort of stuff. Probably would have been relatively nice because that's what she did for a living. But who knows? So I wanted to leave you with this idea that the search for the Holy Grail, you know, was it real? Did it ever really amount to something in particular, where there was a real glass that you could hold? And, well, what I wanted to say is, it is about the journey. The Holy Grail is about that search for transformation. The Holy Grail is about that search for mysticism. It says, is there something that takes me further than I've ever been before? Is there something that I can use as the divine words, as the divine experience that takes me deeper and deeper and deeper? And the answer is, yeah, it's the journey. It's not the goblet itself. But I wanted to leave you with one thought. Because the question is there a real Holy Grail that Jesus actually drank out of and that can change your life and change the world?